We would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands we are recording on today. We pay our respects to the Wurundjeri, Woiwurrung and Boonwurrung people of the Kulin Nation and their elders past and present. We also acknowledge the traditional owners from all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander lands you are listening from today. The distance from Mildura to Melbourne is about 540 kilometres, which we decide to do all at once, as the mafia bosses did when they had to travel from one city to another for their tribunal meetings. As we discovered in the last episode, even the mafia has a bureaucratic system to deliver justice. That might mean cutting off ears, mutilating bodies, or making people disappear forever. Not punishments we usually see in our regular life, but the system for making those decisions is strangely familiar. We hit the freeway mid-morning. It's a long but doable journey. And it also helps us better understand the logistics of travelling between the three sides of the Griffith, Mildura and Melbourne Mafia Triangle. Do you remember what Anna Sergi told me before we set off on our road trip?
I think the identity of the Calabrian Mafia, the 'Ndrangheta, consolidated elsewhere. And this elsewhere is not Melbourne, it's Griffith.
And that's why we began our road trip there, trying to work out if our paranoia was real or imagined. We drifted our way through side stories on the road to Mildura, and in the process we've learnt a lot about the backstory of the Mafia in Australia, the whys and hows of its history. But it is in Melbourne that the 'Ndrangheta really took hold and was for the first time acknowledged by the authorities as existing and as a real threat. I'm Carlo Reglia. Welcome to my Australian Mafia road trip. It's a little known fact, but Victoria Police recognised the existence of the 'Ndrangheta even before the Italian police, who in the 1960s were obsessed with the growing threat of the Mafia in Sicily. Events in Griffith and Mildura put the Honours Society on the national radar, but Carlton, Fitzroy and Brunswick became the stomping ground for the newborn 'Ndrangheta, as we will soon see. But there is a backstory.
The 'Ndrangheta in Australia has over 100 years of history. So the first data set that we have is the arrivals of King of Italy ship in December 1922. And the King of Italy arrived in Fremantle, then Adelaide, then Melbourne, and in each of these stops dropped a founder of the Australian Honour Society. In Fremantle we have Arcangelo Macri, in Adelaide we have Antonio Barbaro, and then in Melbourne we have Domenico Strano, who eventually didn't stay in Melbourne, went on elsewhere for most of his life. The story of the three founders of the Australian 'Ndrangheta gives us already the proof that the 'Ndrangheta in Australia is not only a criminal phenomenon, but very much belongs to folklore and to social history.
The number three.
Yes, the number three is the same that we have in Calabria. Osso Mastrosso and Carcagnosso, who are the three Spanish knights who came from Spain to southern Italy to found the three mafias, the Calabrian Mafia, the Sicilian Mafia and the Neapolitan Mafia. And the number three in the 'Ndrangheta is a recurring number.
The Spanish knight Osso, according to myth, founded Cosa Nostra in Sicily, Mastrosso the 'Ndrangheta in Calabria, and Calcagnosso, the Camorra in Naples. And the number three, with mystical and religious significance, often appears in mafia stories.
The 'Ndrangheta still today is, let's say, governed by a triad, by three men, three functions, three roles given to three men from the Ionian side, the Reggio City side, and the Tyrrhenian side of Calabria, all in the province of Reggio Calabria. So the number three is the recurring number. It's obviously a religious, symbolic number. So the fact that we find this kind of history, this kind of legend, is already telling us that the history of the 'Ndrangheta in Australia became social history.
So we can trace the religious symbolism of the Calabrian 'Ndrangheta even in its Australian origins. Instead of Osso, Mastrosso and Calcagnosso, we find Angelo Macri, Antonio Barbaro and Domenico Strano, founding the 'Ndrangheta Down Under in Fremantle, Adelaide and Melbourne just over 100 years ago. The name itself has ancient and noble origins. 'Ndrangheta is said to derive from the old Greek, aner agathos, meaning men of honor. I wonder if these mythologized origin stories and the mantle of nobility are the only differences from normal crime, so to speak. As usual, there is more than meets the eye.
So mafias are more than organized crime. And this is something that is very problematic for many states to comprehend. Mafias are like organized crime groups, profit-driven. They want money. They try and make money, however, not just illegally, but also legally. And why do they do that? They do that because the ultimate goal of mafias are social prestige and power. And by power, you can mean anything. It means economic power. It means control of territory and recognition by your peers. It means political power. And it means essentially just the ability to have discretion over certain decisions that normally are public decisions. Who gets a contract, who gets elected, who gets essentially a say in public life. And the power-profit dichotomy of mafias is not often found in other criminal groups. Mafias are organizations, systems of power that aim at often protecting their own community because the community demands them protection. So they emerged most often than not in areas where public protection was absent. The state was not perceived to be able to protect its citizens. So they are forms of private protection. And with this type of protection, obviously, mafias have become incredibly powerful actors in social life of the people. And often they are not rejected by their people, they are wanted. And again, this creates a bit of a confusion when these organizations are associated to criminal acts, to purely criminal acts, because most of the time their own people do not recognize them as criminal actors. They recognize them as, we might call them, extra-legal actors, actors of governance, actors of power.
And the first time the 'Ndrangheta officially showed itself was in Fitzroy, just over 20 years after the mythical arrival of their founders in Australia. In 1945, a gruesome murder sent a clear message. We're standing in front of a house on King William Street, a few metres from the St Andrews Hotel and across the street from the Carlton Gardens. On October 7, 1945, this house was owned by a man called Antonio Cardamona. Inside it, there were four men drinking beer. Only three came out.
The story goes that Fat Joe Versace, Giuseppe Versace, died the night, was killed actually, with 91 stab wounds to a body that was highly unrecognizable. Afterwards, the newspaper reported that it was such violence that was inconceivable, that it had been an accident. And yet, there has been, you know, a trial to try and understand what happened that night, who were the other men. And this is where things become interesting, because the other men were no ordinary men. So we have someone named Michele Scriva, and two other men named Dominic. And one of these, well, one was Domenico Pezzimenti and another one was Domenico De Marte. It's a name that will tell you something at the end of this podcast. Domenico De Marte was a very well-known honor society, Black Hand Society. At this stage, it's very difficult to mention what it is. He's a very well-known member and he's someone that later on will become a leader of the honor society during the Queen Victoria Market murders. So Domenico Di Marte actually goes to the police, together with Domenico Pezzimenti, to confess.
Pause. I have to admit that I had to have Anna repeat the story to me three times before I figured out who was who and who did what. It will become much clearer in a little while, I promise. But for now, all you need to know is that these two Domenicos went to the police and willingly confessed to the murder of Fat Joe Versace after an argument about family honor.
It looked like something quite trivial, but then again, remember the 91 stab wounds, right? So it doesn't fit whatever happened. Remember, it's 1945. It's not like the Italian community and the Calabrian community willingly cooperated with the police at that time. Actually, the opposite. There was fairly, you know, conflictual relationship with the police.
So it's very strange.
It's a really, really strange.
Someone from the
really
strange
is,
goes
yeah.
And confess.
Yeah. So Domenico De Marte or Domenico De Marte and Domenico Pizzimenti basically said that, you know, they just reacted to something that was happening. They spoke about who held the knife, what happened with the knife, and it was clear that they created a story. They were talking in pair, one after the other. The trial went in a very lenient way, and the two men were eventually praised for coming forward. So I think eventually, if you want to look at it from an analytical perspective, this was a staged confession that was meant to get the men an obvious recognition for the murder, so everyone knew who that was. So there couldn't be any misunderstanding of how Fat Joe had died on the one
any
end.
Any misunderstanding within
the organization, so for whoever looked at it. And also something else that happened later confirms us that there is something going on there. So the man who recognized Fat Joe Versace was none of the other than Antonio Barbaro.
The pieces of the puzzle are starting to come together. Remember when Anna promised that we would find Antonio Barbaro again? Nicknamed the Toad, he was one of the legendary founders of the 'Ndrangheta in Australia. And it's him that shows up at the morgue to help the police with the case. The scene would be farcical if it were not tragic. Let's recap it. Fat Joe Versace is stabbed to death. Domenico Pizzimenti, along with Domenico De Marti, the two Domenicos, unexpectedly confessed to the murder. Enter the Toad, Antonio Barbaro, who right on cue shows up at the morgue to identify the body. This begins to look a little bit suspicious. Antonio Barbaro is an interesting figure. Apart from his mythical role as founder, he was an important man in the after-war 'Ndrangheta. He was a fixer, solving problems for other 'Ndrangheta members, since he spoke excellent English and knew how to manipulate the legal and immigration system.
There were certain men, facilitators, who were able to manipulate the system for sponsorship in a very effective manner. So, for example, Antonio Barbaro sponsored at least 10 subjects that had a criminal conviction to come to Australia. He helped Domenico Italiano, at the time the boss of the Honor Society, died in 1962, to sponsor another 10 people and a few other, Michele Scriva, all of the men that we find also in this murder in King William Street at some point were involved with Antonio Barbaro in his, what we can call, some sort of, you know, labor racketeering or visa fraud.
So, we have an honor argument that has gone too far, into a crime of passion, if you like, despite it being obvious that it is an execution. The corpse is then identified by one of the founding fathers of the mafia in Australia. I ask Anna what she makes of it.
It is often considered the first mafia murder in the sense that it is an execution. It's not the first person that dies because of a man of the 'Ndrangheta. This happened already. This was the case of Detective Constable Clare that was killed in the 30s by a man who was trying to get the recognition as a member of the Honor Society in Melbourne. But, you know, this King William Street murder is probably the first one that we have of an intentional execution that was meant to show everyone else who was in charge. And who was in charge was also the people who eventually, A, recognized the body, Antonio Barbaro, and on the other side, Domenico De Marte, who confessed to it in a way that is absolutely staged if we look at it from today.
At the time, it looked like a crime of honour.
Yeah.
But the reality is quite different. Tell me about the police. Were they pretty much taken for a ride, or they just accepted their version because, I don't know, maybe for racism or because it was community they didn't want to mess with. They just let it go.
The interesting thing was that they were charged with murder, but both of them, even if they confessed to it, they pleaded not guilty, because in their mind, the fact that they had, that it was an altercation gone wrong in their mind. So it was some sort of, you know, self-defense gone wrong. So it might have been manslaughter, not murder in their, obviously, I don't know what they were thinking, but in their mind, probably something like that. But because of the 91 stab wounds, it was very difficult again to believe that it was nothing short of an execution. And yet, we couldn't go beyond that. We couldn't go beyond murder and that was it. There is no understanding that there was an organization behind, that there was, this might have been part of a bigger picture, of a bigger story, and the reason why Fat Joe Versace was actually killed is still very, you know, uncertain.
Fat Joe Versace was killed with 91 stab wounds on his body. Why so many?
The number is only important if you look at the result. The result is a complete destroyal of the body. So it's the annihilation of the person who was executed. And I think that brutality, we should never forget this, is very much part of the 'Ndrangheta DNA. The 'Ndrangheta reputation is built on violence, has always been built on violence. And that kind of violence is very difficult to forget once you see it.
The tenants of the house where Fat Joe Versace was killed are beginning to look at us in a funny way. It is our cue to leave King William Street and Fitzroy, with our new destination less than 3 kilometres away. Welcome to the Queen Victoria Market murders. One of the watershed moments in the history of mafia in Australia.
The Queen Victoria Market was the pulsating heart of Melbourne, and it's always been Melbourne's most important market. You know, back in the days, it was divided up between a wholesale and a retail section, and the wholesale section was probably one of the most important area to receive the migrant workers. And the Queen Victoria Market at the time was obviously the place where a lot of the Italian migrants started working.
We arrive at the market on a Saturday morning, as the usual crowd is flocking to the stalls. I wonder why so many markets around the world become easy prey for local mafias.
Because markets are self-contained environments where there are rules of behavior that very much relate to those who exist in the market but not visible for those who are outside. These rules of behavior include not just being polite to one another and being nice to the person who is next, the next stalls from you, but also relate to the prices, relate to the competition rules, which oftentimes are unregulated or oftentimes are informally regulated. So basically just on handshakes, especially back in the days. And it's a place of cash. Historically, even if today you can pay by card and we're all used to this, but the markets are informal, are cash-based areas, and so this is facilitates the informality of relationship.
A cash-based economy and a general live and let live attitude in the stalls contributed to the emergence of the mafia in the market. However, that balance was disrupted in the early 1960s by two deaths that would lead to a fierce turf war.
The Queen Victoria Market murders, also known as Gangland Melbourne, is probably the first episodes in history, the first episode in history that consolidated the idea of the Honour Society in the mind of Melbournians, or in general in the minds of Australians. At the same time, when things in Griffith were starting to pick up, so we had, it's the same decade, more or less. And the Queen Victoria Market murders were obviously linked to a society. It was called the Honour Society also in the media. It's probably the first time that the term Honour Society becomes very much established. It was already there, but it's the first time that it becomes established in the media.
The story of the Queen Victoria Market murders begins in 1962, with the death of natural causes of one of the first recognised Calabrian mafia bosses. His name was Domenico Italiano, nicknamed the Pope. The following year, his ally Antonio Barbaro also died. Remember him? When Fat Joe Versace was murdered in Fitzroy, Barbaro was the man who identified the body. Italiano and Barbaro, the Pope and the Toad, controlled the Queen Victoria Market. And when they died, the leadership was up for grabs. Two factions soon appeared, one headed by Vincenzo Angeletta and one by Vincenzo Muratore. On Muratore's side, we find another old acquaintance, Faggio Versace's killer, Domenico De Marte. And soon the bodies started dropping. But before we continue our story, let's focus on one of the main characters. By now you probably understand how we work. When we want to delve into something and need inspiration, Anna Sergi and I look for a cemetery. We drive less than 3 kilometers away and arrive at the Melbourne Cemetery in Carlton. There, with some difficulty, we find Vincenzo Angeletta's grave.
We are in the middle of the cemetery. We just walked around and I didn't know it existed, but apparently there's an app and it tells you where to find graves.
Find a grave, yes.
It's called Find a Grave of a person of interest. And of course, we have our persons of interest to look for. Where are we now?
We are near the grave of Vincenzo Angeletta, the man who essentially created the spark for the Queen Victoria Market murders. And Angeletta is buried here next to his wife, but he was killed when he was only 47 years of age. He was killed in April 1963. It was 2:30 in the morning, and he was shot near his house. And the moment he had parked his car, he was coming back from work. Angeletta was killed because after the void that was created when Italiano died and when Barbaro died, we're talking about 1962, the Honor Society and the market needed, basically went through a period of change. Angeletta was believed to have created his own stream of cash without the agreement of the others in the so-called commission. So the reason why he had a disagreement with people like Domenico De Marte was there's this disagreement because there was an allegation that Angeletta had bypassed the commission agents. So basically he was making money on his own without paying the fees that were given to these so-called commission agents. And the commission agents, he was going basically trying to cut corners. And the commission agents at the time were all members of the Honor Society. And the reason why he was doing this is because he had to dispose of his produce, and instead of paying the commission fee to the agents that, you know, were creating the bottleneck of services you needed to use to dispose of your produce, he just went through his own channels. And at the same time, Domenico De Marte was convinced that Angeletta had formed a bastarda cell of the Honor Society, a breakaway group that wasn't authorized, essentially. And that was because Angeletta wanted to change the Honor Society, wanted to go a little bit wider, not just extorting Calabrians. He wanted to extort everyone and go a little bit more in a more modern direction. And that's
multicultural Melbourne for you.
Absolutely. He was already embracing the multiculturality of Melbourne, and what essentially we will see afterwards with the Carlton crew.
Angeletta's initiative worried the other faction. They organized a tribunal that formally warned him to give up his plans. And to make their point better understood, they also stabbed him. But this was not enough to make Angeletta stop, unleashing the wrath of De Marte and Muratore.
There was allegedly a tribunal that was formed in Melbourne to decide what to do with Angeletta, because the people who had taken over, Muratore and De Marte, they had taken over after Domenico Italiano died. They were very much the stronger line of the Honor Society at the time, you know, wanted to do things right and to dispose of Angeletta and do something with him that was agreed by others. So there was allegedly a tribunal, and Angeletta was formally admonished, so he was alerted that if he continued doing what he was doing, and he was also stabbed as a warning. That's the story goes. But eventually Angeletta didn't agree to this admonition. We know that he had a revenge plan, and obviously De Marte and Muratore couldn't stand this any further, and that's how essentially they killed him, and they claimed that the killing was in self-defense, but obviously it wasn't, because if someone is shot dead outside his house at 2:30 in the morning, it's not self-defense.
This is how the Victoria Market Mafia War started, with all the main characters eventually shooting each other dead. executions often took place at the victims' homes, where they were most vulnerable. But it's not clear how many people died in this power struggle. Anna tells me that it's at least 5 or 6, but the number could be higher depending on how you count them. We leave Angeletta's grave in the hot sun and go back to the market. Even 60 years after the events, who was involved and how is still subject to debate. What is clear, with no doubts, was that the last man standing was the boss who would bring peace to the market for the next 20 years. Liborio Benvenuto, whose nickname predates Sex and the City.
He was known as Mr. Big, and he was the kind of person that managed to impose the peace on the market. We have to remember that there were many men who died in this power struggle, and most of them didn't have a criminal record officially, but they were Calabrians. They were well known to have associated with the 'Ndrangheta back home, back in Calabria. So they had dubious fame, let's call it that. So when Liborio Benvenuto emerged, when his figure emerged, then things calmed down, and the Queen Victoria market eventually, after a few years, finished, ended. But it wasn't just about Liborio Benvenuto's capability to impose an order. It was also the reaction from Victoria Police. Victoria Police reacted very, you know, quickly, because obviously they were creating quite a bit of panic into the market, into the normal people who, you know, Calabrians, Italians, and non-Italians who were working here. So there was quite a push towards solving this situation. And it was one of the most important times to understand the 'Ndrangheta in Australia, because Vic Paul asked for help, both from the US and received agent Jack Cusack from the FBI in secondment, while the Italians sent Ugo Macera, who was part of the authorities back in Italy. And the Macera-Cusack investigations into the Queen Victoria market eventually gave us what is the first official description of the 'Ndrangheta in Australia. And for the first time, we read in the Cusack documents, that was 1964, that the Honor Society exists in Australia. It has existed for a few decades, that it is different from the Sicilian Mafia, that every member has to pay a fee of entry, that there are about 200, 250 members in Victoria only, which at the time was considered a lot.
Let's focus on this. The Cusack-Macera report clearly said that this kind of mafia was Calabrian and not Sicilian. The impact of the report was huge, because even in Italy at the time, the 'Ndrangheta was very little known.
It had nothing to do with the Sicilian mafia, which was a long time coming, obviously, but it was a very important document, because you need to remember that at the time, Italy was getting extremely interested in the Sicilian mafia. It's 1962. In the next few years, Italy would have had the anti-mafia commission. Some of the murders linked to the Sicilian mafia had already started. So Italy is going in a completely different direction, starting with the obsession, obviously linked to the emergency and the alarm created by the Sicilian mafia. So for Melbourne, for a Melbourne-based investigation to say that actually this is mafia, because he works on protection racket, he works with extortion, he works with a cohort of men that are all linked together by family ties and by, you know, a certain type of organizational skills, to say that that is Calabrian and is not Sicilian, and it actually differs very much from the Sicilian mafia, is a unique thing in history. It's paradoxically, we can say that Australia understood the 'Ndrangheta way before Italy.
We won't delve into the differences between the two mafias, but the reason why the mafia from Sicily wasn't present in Australia is linked to migration waves in post-war Italy. In the 1950s, migration from Sicily to Australia came from the eastern areas where the mafia was not yet developed. Later, the mafia got a hold in the provinces of Messina, Siracusa, Ragusa, but in the 50s, it was not strong enough to be exported down under.
The Sicilian mafia, Cosa Nostra, has not had rooting in Australia for various reasons, including the fact that the migration here happened later than in countries such as the United States and Canada, where instead it is very present.
So the Victoria Police understood the extent of the 'Ndrangheta before Italy did, and moved quickly to stem the violence with arrests and raids. And with the arrival of Mr. Big, Liborio Benvenuto, the guns and pistols soon stopped firing, and calm was restored for the next 20 years.
The Liborio Benvenuto story would have lasted until 1988 when he died. And these 20 years of his, let's say, power, of him being the boss, are very much associated with a period of peace in Melbourne, including in the Queen Victoria Market. Not peace in the sense that no one died, obviously, because people did die, but it was also a much bigger problem. But in the Honor Society, in those 20 years, Liborio Benvenuto managed to facilitate contacts with the rest of the country. So obviously with Griffith and with Mildura, it was very much the point of reference for everyone in the other parts of the, you know, in New South Wales, in South Australia. So he was very much recognized as the boss of Melbourne. And obviously, when you have a clear leadership line, things tend to be more stable.
That stability brought calm to the market. And that calm remained even after Liborio Benvenuti's death.
The Queen Victoria Market is absolutely changed. The wholesale market has moved. Obviously, we are talking here about Footscray and Epping wholesale for fruit and vegetables. So obviously, with that, also quite a lot of the reputation of the Queen Victoria Market has remained crystallized in the 60s for when it comes to any type of mafia activities. But, you know, the wholesale market is still of interest for whatever the Honor Society has become today. It does remain a cash-based industry, and it does remain, you know, a place where it's easier to sell protection and to demand payment for protection, which might or might not amount to extortion, but it might amount to more sophisticated forms of, let's say, market control.
The problem is still here, but it's moved.
The problem is still here. It's less violent, definitely. It's not violent at all. And it's less perceived as a systematic grip on the market.
Today's Queen Victoria Market is a distant relative of that of the 1960s. Just as Lygon Street in Carlton seems to be a very different place than it was in the 1990s.
It's completely different. Almost all of the businesses, bar a couple, have flipped over, and there's banks here now, and there's food from all over the world. It's still a meeting place, but it's definitely not nearly as common to see as it once was. It's a tourist strip.
A tourist strip that in the 1990s was a theatre of clashes, betrayals, and settling of scores. In the next episode, we will hear the story of the infamous Carlton crew, as journalist Chris Vedelago walks us through the suburbs of Carlton and Brunswick. My Australian Mafia Road Trip is produced by me, Carlo Reglia, with special thanks to my travelling companion and mafia expert, Anna Sergi. Thanks also to SBS Italian and the SBS audio team. To have episodes delivered directly to your device, you can download the SBS Audio app, or follow on Apple, Spotify, or whatever you get your podcasts.